We have been watching and listening to news accounts, both on Federal News Radio and other places, about what is going on in the Indian Ocean, the situation with the U.S. ship that has been attacked by pirates. The crew of that ship took the ship back from those pirates, but not before they were they got off the ship with the captain, Captain Phillips. And as we watch what is going on, it is my pleasure to welcome to the program to get insight into this situation, Vice Admiral John Morgan. He's a director at the U.S. Naval Institute and founder of Instantiation. Did I pronounce the name of your company correctly, sir?
You did, Francis.
It's a consultancy based in the Washington, D.C. area and Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Admiral Morgan joined the Navy in 1972 and served the Navy and the country for 36 years. He was commanding 10,000 men and women in the USS Enterprise Carrier Battle Group on September 11th, leading them out of the Strait of Hormuz at that time. He turned his group around, was first in theater of operations against Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, went on to become a key advisor to Chief of Naval Operations and then Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Admiral Mike Mullen, and directed the creation of a cooperative strategy for 21st century sea power. Thank you very much for your service to our country, sir, and thank you for being on the program today.
Thanks for that expression, Francis. I greatly appreciate it.
As we look at this piracy issue and think about it, it seems to have sprung onto the national media consciousness, at least, rather quickly. How long has this problem really been brewing, though?
Francis, it's been brewing for quite some time. If my figures are correct, I think there have been over 60 pirate attacks just this year. It's been happening off the coast of Somalia for the last 4 or 5 or 6 years. We even saw evidence of piracy in the Straits of Malacca near Singapore over the course of the last decade, and that might be a very good case study to look at, is to see how they've been able to successfully combat piracy off their coastal waters.
Do you think there is any significance to the timing of this attack on a U.S. ship, or is it simply opportunity?
I think it's simply opportunity. I think that's the way the pirates are operating. And one should not confuse who these sea criminals are. They're using some sophisticated means. They resort to the use of GPS units at sea, some just handheld satellite radios. They use weapons that are successful in what they're trying to achieve. So this is a pretty thorny problem.
They certainly have the resources to be able to devote to advanced technology because of the successes that they've had in getting ransom in the past.
That's true. It's in the hundreds of millions of dollars of ransom that have been collected by pirates over the last 2 or 3 years.
So as you're watching the convergence of some of the ships on this area and the situation with the hostages we mentioned, what are your observations as a naval commander as you're watching these events unfold?
Well, first and foremost, our thoughts and prayers go out to Captain Richards and his family. We certainly hope for the quick and safe return for the captain. I guess he tried to jump out of the lifeboat and was brought back aboard by the pirates today. So he's doing everything that a sea captain can do. You know, there's a bigger issue here, Francis, that I think we have to keep in mind, and that is it's about the rule of law, and we can never allow the sea domain to become a lawless frontier like this episode is playing out to be. And I think the U.S. Navy's response, along with other coalition partners, has been a very balanced one, a respect for the rule of law, not trying to overwhelm this small group of pirates with deadly force. Certainly we've got plenty of that, more than we would ever need. But there has been a very balanced response by the United States and the United States Navy so far.
And yet, what does that response, how does that response maybe change as we learn that the pirates are sending more ships? They're essentially sending reinforcements.
Well, the pirates, I think, typically operate from motherships. Then they disperse from the motherships in very small boats, sometimes called skiffs. They often sink them as they approach a vesicle that they want to overtake. But there are not many reinforcements that they could send that would pose any significant threat to the United States Navy on scene.
Were you surprised when you learned that Captain Phillips tried to escape?
No, I think it just shows his heroic bravery that as I understand from press reports, he even sacrificed himself to be taken hostage for the benefit of his crew. And so this is a daring, heroic, courageous man who will go to any length, I suspect, to try to escape his captors.
As based on your experience, what do you think is going on board the naval ships that are in this area and hosting the FBI team that is doing the negotiating and so forth?
Well, I think what you're seeing on a part of the United States government is an interagency response. The president has been personally involved in getting briefings in the Situation Room. He's hearing the advice from maritime experts. The attorney general has dispatched the FBI to the scene. And you see, there are limits to military power, and we have to be very careful in the military that we know we do not cross a line into law enforcement, and that's why the FBI has arrived on scene.
So, and that's a very delicate place to be, because there are some people who are saying, well, the first thing we've got to do is just blast them.
Well, that's right, and you can see that we haven't blasted them. We've kept our guns in our holsters, and I think that's probably a prudent thing to do at this point.
Yeah, it would seem that that could just tend to make things really, really bad, really, really fast.
Yeah, I think that would truly endanger Captain Phillips' life.
When we think about somebody on a lifeboat, we think about most people who don't have a lot of experience on water are thinking about the lifeboats that we see on yachts in Annapolis Harbor or whatever the frame of reference is. What's the reality of the situation that the captain is in, just space-wise? I'm not talking about even the situation that he's dealing with the aggressors or any of that. Five people on a boat like this, how long can you really hold out with minimal supplies?
Well, I don't know how big the studio that you're in right now, Francis, but I can tell you the confines of the lifeboat are probably smaller than your studio. You're right. I've seen reports that the lifeboat is out of fuel right now. Lifeboats tend to be equipped with about 10 days of water and some very basic rations. So I don't think that timeline will expire for another 8 or 9 days before they're really desperate for really water will be the key.
We talked a little bit about what might be going on board the Navy ships that are in this region. Your specific role, put yourself back on board that ship, and you're the commander of this group of ships that's trying to negotiate through this, and by negotiate I mean just kind of make sure that the whole situation is handled correctly. What's your number one focus? What is your number one priority?
Well, certainly your number one priority is to maintain situational awareness. You mentioned the prospect of other pirates arriving. Certainly the captain of that destroyer is surveilling the area. He's keeping his eyes just completely focused on the lifeboat itself, probably attempting to try to establish some communication so there's a line of negotiation that could go on. I don't know whether there are radios on board the lifeboat or not. The captain will be plugged into his command authority, the commander of the Fifth Fleet, who in turn will be plugged into General Petraeus back in Tampa and what's going on in Washington. And the captain is the on-scene commander, is going to be coordinating the arrival of any other additional support like the FBI. And he's also has an array of military contingencies that he will be considering and always weighing risks and benefits.
My guest is Vice Admiral John Morgan, a director at the U.S. Naval Institute and the founder of Instantiation. I knew I was going to blow it at some point there, Admiral.
You're doing great, Fred.
Instantiation on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Admiral, when we come back, I'd like to talk about the long-term implications here, looking past this particular episode and thinking about both policy and the other issues associated with this. We'll do that in just a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's In-Depth with Francis Rose. We're back on In-Depth with Francis Rose. This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Vice Admiral John Morgan, director at the U.S. Naval Institute and founder of Instantiation, a consultancy here in the D.C. area. And, Admiral, before we move on to the long-term implications of what's going on in the Indian Ocean, I wondered if you had any other thoughts that we hadn't had a chance to touch on about this particular incident or any of the things that have happened to ships of other countries leading up to this incident.
Well, Francis, just when you were on commercial break, I'm just on the web here in my home office, and I see that President Sarkozy has indicated that during a rescue attempt on a hijacked yacht in the Gulf of Aden in the same general neighborhood that I guess a hostage was killed and a couple of pirates were killed. And so you see an incident that's happening just a few hundred miles away from where the Maersk Alabama was seized, where the intervention of force has resulted in the rescue of some hostages, but at some cost.
Mm-hmm.
So it just points out the bigger picture that I think you're very appropriate to focus on now, and that is, how does the rule of law, how is it applied on the bounding main? And I can tell you there's a huge policy issue at stake here, and that has to do with the United Nations Convention on Law of the Sea. Francis, 150 of countries of around the world have ascended to this Law of the Sea Convention. The United States has not. And if we're going to stop this kind of criminal behavior on the high seas, it's got to be rooted in the basis of the rule of law.
Mm-hmm.
And as the president watches this situation unfold and the situation in the Gulf of Aden unfold, and I'm thankful for his leadership and his attention in this matter, I would urge the president to encourage the United States Senate to take a vote about the United Nations Law of the Sea Convention. It's vital to stop this kind of behavior.
What has been the holdup in that not happening so far? Has it been political? Have there been legitimate issues raised? A lot of times when something is raised with the United Nations, people talk about sovereignty and so forth. What has been the holdup?
There's been a holdup for, close to 30 years. And originally, President Reagan opposed the passage of the Law of the Sea Convention, and for good reason. The convention at that point during his presidency had flaws, but the convention has been repaired since then. And I think there is some just political baggage that has carried on for far too long, mostly rooted in myth right now. And Francis, I would welcome the opportunity to debate any critic on your program in the future about why it is really in the United States' best interest to join the rest of the world in this convention that I think will ensure or at least give the basis for dealing with instances like piracy in the foundations of the rule of law.
Tell me about the flaws originally and then how they were corrected, because this seems to be a thread that runs through issues that come out of the United Nations that we see this with all kinds of international things like this.
I think the flaws that existed in the treaty back when President Reagan was in office had to do with our coastal sea shelf, the continental shelf, the rights to minerals on those shelves. And oh, by the way, the United States has the longest and vastest continental shelf of any country in the world, and you could imagine the types of resources that exist on those shelves. Those have now been corrected. There have been other corrections to the treaty over the course of those 30 years where any perception of a restriction on U.S. military have been removed, and they're very clear that those restrictions don't exist. There have been some seabed mining provisions that were contested, but I think those have been resolved. There was this notion that there were pollution provisions that would be very expensive for the United States to shoulder. And once again, I think over the march of time, every flaw that I've seen in the convention has been restored or has been corrected, I should say. I should also note, Francis, that every chief of naval operations since 1982 has endorsed the United States' ascension to this treaty. The current chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Mike Mullen, has testified on the Hill of his support for the convention. So the key here is we can never allow the bounding main to be a lawless place.
Is it possible, something that I find very curious, and we just have a minute before we have to take another break, but I find it very curious, normally when there is a situation like this, members of Congress are very quick to speak out about what they think the solution might be. I've heard almost nobody, in fact, I don't know if I can point to one single member in either body who has said anything about this. Does that give you, as a retired admiral, hope that maybe this particular episode is being taken under consideration very guardedly by the Hill?
I'm watching the political reaction myself, Francis, and I would, my hope would be that we better understand the policy implications that you've now redirected the attention of your audience to in the last few minutes, and I applaud you for doing that. I think responsible men and women in leadership roles have to debate this issue, and we have to take a stance. And because what we found in the Straits of Malacca when piracy was a problem, it was through international cooperation between Singapore, Indonesia, and Malaysia that really nipped this in the bud.
Mm-hmm. Admiral, as I said, we have to take a break, but I would love to continue our conversation in a moment on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, talking to Vice Admiral John Morgan. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Federal News Radio 1500 AM. You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose. My guest today is Vice Admiral John Morgan, a director at the U.S. Naval Institute and founder of Instantiation and a 36-year servant in the United States Navy. And thank you again, Admiral Morgan, for being on the program today. Before we went to the break, I wanted to ask you about the long-term policy implications above and beyond what we talked about, the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea. But during the break, a note passed the wire here that mentions that General Petraeus, who you referenced earlier, is saying the American military is going to increase its presence near the Horn of Africa. And the quote is, to ensure that we have all the capability that might be needed over the course of the coming days. Now, that sounds rather innocuous, but if you think about what that means coming from the person that it's coming from, there are some very serious implications here, and the potential exists that this could go any number of different directions. Isn't that true?
Well, I think it is, and I suspect what General Petraeus is really focusing on is to ensure that we have sufficient surveillance assets in the area so he can really get, and the local commanders can really establish a good situational awareness of even the smallest boats that are floating around in that region.
As I said, we talked about the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea and your passion for the passage of that, for the ratification of that on our part, was very evident. What else do we do, though, in a situation, say we do go ahead and become a part of that, ratify that treaty? Then what happens when and if this happens again?
Well, I think, Francis, one thing that your listeners need to keep in mind is that as much as the attention is now focused on what can be done at sea, a lot has to be done ashore to stop pirates. Pirates are operating from bases. We know where they are. They're operating in a country that really is almost ungovernable right now in Somalia. And we have to restore, once again, a sense of law, of order and good governance in Somalia. So that takes an interagency approach. You know, the people of Somalia and the people of Kenya are really the losers here because the Maersk Alabama was carrying simply food supplies and medical supplies to impoverished people in that region. And so part of the solution is what General Petraeus is trying to do in surveilling the oceans where these ships are operating, but how do we stop this lawlessness ashore as well, from operating from those pirate camps?
Something that seems to complicate this, from my view at least, is that normally in a situation like this, you would have the owners of the ships or the owners of whatever is being imperiled going to lawmakers, going to somebody and saying, you got to stop this. This is ridiculous. This is costing us a lot of money. It appears, at least to my amateur eyes, that the ship companies, the freight companies, are viewing this just as a cost of doing business, paying the ransom pretty much, you know, within a day or two of these taking place, as though it's easier to just pay the money than it is to change the way they do business or to try to work with government or governments to make a difference with this.
And that's why it's such a thorny problem right now, Francis. You're right. I think many ship owners are actually just chalking this up as a cost of doing business. But that cost is getting more expensive to them. All those ships rely upon Lloyd's of London for insurance. And I can tell you, in the Gulf of Aden, coming out of the Suez Canal into the Red Sea and up off the coast of Somalia, shipping companies are now paying wartime insurance rates. And those rates will continue to go up if 60 and 70 attacks occur over the course of 3 or 4 or 5 months. The situation just cannot continue. And so you keep coming back to this one central issue, I think, Francis, and that is, who is going to be the referee here? Who is going to set down the rules of the game? And who's going to enforce those rules of the game?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a very interesting thing unfolding this afternoon. Whoever the French military commander is that went in to get the hostages on the on the French yacht in the Gulf of Aden, he's protected by the law of the sea treaty.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. commander on scene on Maersk Alabama is not.
Mm-hmm. At what point, then, based on where we stand today, at what point does this change from the FBI negotiating with someone or with the pirates on the lifeboat or with the people representing them in some of the ships that are approaching or whatever into a different kind of operation?
Well, I'm sure, I have no knowledge of it, but I'm sure that the local military commanders are considering bringing in probably Navy Special Forces. Those great Navy SEALs who can operate under the water, on the water, and from the sky if they need to. So those are contingencies that I'm sure that are being considered right now. It'll all come down to this, Francis. How much do the pirates value their own lives? And it requires, I think, a very delicate sense of negotiation right now, because if something dreadful were to happen to Captain Phillips, then the pirates will surely face capture or being killed.
I guarantee you, Admiral, that if I were one of the four pirates on that boat in the middle of the ocean, I would not be really excited about the prospect of Navy SEALs coming on board.
They're the most ferocious force on the face of the earth, in my judgment, based upon my long experience with them, and they would not want to deal with them.
I am very, very grateful for the time that you've spent with me this afternoon, Admiral Morgan, and I will look forward to talking to you again in the future. Vice Admiral John Morgan, director of the U.S. Naval Institute, and founder of Instantiation, a consultancy in the D.C. area and also based in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Thank you so much for your time today, Admiral.
Thank you, Francis.